Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. I hope everybody visits the site every day. So much there, including information on the topic that we'll discuss today. Not in a recent article, but it's been there. It's been there by me in some articles that I've written. It will be there again in an article I'm writing specifically on today's topic. And my guest today is Marcy Newman. Marcy is an American scholar, a teacher, a human rights activist. She's now a literature and American and Middle East studies professor. And she's teaching at Al-Najah University in Nablus in the West Bank. She previously taught at Boise State University in Idaho, and more recently at several other Middle Eastern universities. Today's topic is the global BDS movement. BDS for boycott, divestment, and sanctions for Palestine, against Israel, of course. And Marcy is one of 15 U.S. professors in a U.S. part of a U.S. campaign for the academic and cultural boycott of Israel. It's a major thing, a major issue, a major initiative. I believe it's spreading globally, and it needs to be pursued and promoted so more people know about it. Marcy, I understand we have a slight delay because of where you are, but that won't bother me. I welcome you warmly to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're coming in a little faintly. I hope you can hear me. Maybe you can speak as loudly as possible. It's not always easy getting a good connection.
Okay.
Oh, I think that's a little bit better. But I welcome you warmly. This is a very important issue for you. It certainly is for me, and it should be for everyone. Explain your involvement in it. And we can talk about the campaign you're part of and the global BDS movement as well.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine now.
Great. Well, the academic boycotts campaign actually started from the Palestinian call for the academic and cultural boycott several years ago. And I have been trying to get American professors to come on board and to create a movement like people in England and Canada and other parts of the world have done in solidarity with Palestinian faculty members and cultural workers. And finally, because of the latest carnage in Gaza, people are joining on board and endorsing our statement. And basically what this is, it's about boycotting Israeli academic institutions and cultural institutions. And the thing that people have to understand about this is that Israeli institutions are state-funded, so they're part of the government. They don't have private universities. And the other issue is that this is not about individuals boycotting individuals. It's about these institutions. And part of them, for instance, they get grant money from Europe, from the EU even, which is actually against their own charter, which has stipulations about human rights violations and who they can fund. And so given their own charter, they should not be...
Marcy, let me interrupt you. That music means a commercial break. I apologize. We'll take a break, and Marcy, we'll let you pick it right up when we come back. Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Marcy Newman. We're talking about American professors really involved in the global BDS movement, but for a cultural boycott. Marcy, can I mention one thing? I mentioned this on the program yesterday, and I think it deserves repeating. Oh, there's so much that deserves repeating. But this really struck me. In my last article on Gaza, I've written so much on Gaza since the fighting began December 27th. In the last one, I quoted an Israeli professor, Avi Shlaim. He wrote a scathing article against Israel in the London Guardian, kind of material that would be impossible in the New York Times. And at the beginning of the, he's an Israeli. He served in his younger days in the IDF, and now he teaches in the UK. And at the beginning of the article, he quoted a former head of Britain's Cairo office, a man named John Troutbeck, just explaining the kind of state Israel would be. This was in 1948. Troutbeck wrote a letter to Britain's foreign minister, Ernest Bevin, at the time. And he said that America was responsible for creating a gangster state headed by an utterly unscrupulous set of leaders. Of course, he was talking about Ben-Gurion and those people back then. Well, that's the way it was then, and that's the way it's been ever since, and that's the way it is today. And that's why the need is so great for a movement like what you're involved in, Marcy. Let me let you pick it up and continue with what you were saying.
I think it's important to understand the way the state functions here. You know, in the United States, we have different kinds of universities. And as I was saying before the break, here, the Israeli universities are state-funded. And the other thing that we have to understand, like in the United States, this is true as well, the universities are spaces where knowledge is produced to fund, here, to fund the occupation, to fund its military-industrial complex. We have the same thing in the United States, universities producing knowledge about the kinds of things we're doing in Iraq and Afghanistan. But here, they're all state universities, but also military service is compulsory, which means that professors and all sorts of other people within the university and cultural workers, these people, 1 month out of every year, they go into the reserves, or when they have, a siege and aggression on the Gaza, these are people who get called up into the reserves, that they are part of the war that is, and the invasions that affect the Palestinian people. So universities aren't disconnected, and even one of the head generals from this current aggression against Gaza, he is now retiring and has been invited to teach military law at Tel Aviv University. So we have to understand the way that these things are connected.
Well, Israel has always been very militaristic, and so many of its past leaders have come from the military, past generals, either that or certainly involved in one way or another. Ehud Barak, a former prime minister, now the defense minister, Ariel Sharon. These people committed egregious crimes in the military and since. And this goes on and on, and none of this could be possible without the support of Washington, and it's been very ironclad for at least the last four decades or so. Washington even lets Israel get away with attacking U.S. Military forces, as it did in 1967,
yes.
As you know, Marcy, the so-called Liberty Incident.
Exactly.
It was very clear that it was a deliberate attack on a U.S. vessel, killing 30, 40 sailors and wounding dozens more. And the Johnson administration back then just whitewashed the whole thing. So Israel could even get away with killing U.S. troops. So what chance have Palestinians got, Marcy?
That's the other major issue for me as a professor at a Palestinian university. Palestinian education has been under siege since the beginning. Until 1994, for instance, most books were banned, and I'm not just talking about nationalist poetry or history. I'm talking about there have been some Shakespearean plays that have been banned, and some of George Orwell's novels have been banned. There's many different kinds of things. Like the access to knowledge has been under censure, and until now, even Palestinian textbooks are still deeply problematic. My students don't know their own history because there's a level of self-censorship from the Palestinian Authority. They're afraid of what you know, the Israelis who censor and the Americans who monitor, especially Hillary Clinton, what gets produced in these books. So there's this aspect. And then there's also the fact that universities themselves are often under attack. Our dorm on campus, we have students who are kidnapped in the middle of the night by Israelis because they do invade Nablus every single night and kidnap and murder people. And this is true with all over the West Bank. So this is the kind of quiet and slow death that doesn't get reported in the American media, but it happens. And whenever they invade in the West Bank or Gaza, they often attack schools. I mean, several schools in Gaza were attacked this time, including the Islamic University of Gaza, including the American International School, which is a complete and total, I mean, the American school is completely totaled. It doesn't exist anymore. So, I mean, this is common. They attacked the Sesame Street studio when they invaded Ramallah in 2002. They attack cultural and educational institutions all the time. And so one of the main criticisms about the boycott is that it censors free speech and stifles, you know, conversations. But what I would say to people is that why is Israeli free speech more important than Palestinian lives? And what I would also say to that criticism is, you know, Palestinians don't even have the right to education, let alone the right to speak freely and create freely, because every time they do, those things that they create are attacked very violently.
Well, of course, Israel is a Jewish state that grants rights to Jews alone, and even Christians aren't treated particularly well. So, again, what chance do Muslims have? And my understanding, Marcy, is that Israeli children, Jewish children, are taught to deny the very existence of Palestinians. The infamous statement that Golda Meir made when she was prime minister many years ago, that there are no Palestinians. Well, that's Israel's wish. They want there to be no Palestinians. They want to make life so hard that they'll even voluntarily leave, or they'll be displaced, or they'll be killed, or something or other. But distinguished people like Israeli professor Ilan Pape, also teaching in the UK now, and Francis Boyle, international human rights law expert, both have been on this program. They call it like it is, and they say what Israel is doing is committing genocide against the Palestinian people. And Boyle especially is an expert in international law, and he just goes right to the law and says, well, this is exactly what they're doing in violation of the Genocide Convention and Geneva and all the rest. And this gets no play in the U.S. at all. You know it from all the years you've spent here, Marcy. The U.S. media simply ignores all this. And the Palestinians, when the Palestinians defend themselves against daily Israeli oppression, incursions, whatever, self-defense, which is also legal under international law, is called terrorism. And when Hamas gets democratically elected, they're designated by the U.S. State Department as a terrorist organization. I mean, this is pretty outrageous stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this is also actually an issue with the Islamic University of Gaza, that the Israelis bombed with American weapons and American F-16s. The university is on a terrorist list in the United States, too, which is making, it's presenting us with lots of challenges for those of us who are working to try to raise money to rebuild, particularly their science labs that were completely destroyed. Because for Americans who want to donate to help, you then would be considered under American law right now as giving money to a terrorist organization. So this is a problem. But, I mean, the other issue about what Israeli children learn in school that I think people need to understand is that there are Palestinians who live in Israel, and these children are completely, because they're erased from the textbook, their history, their identity is completely erased, and they don't get to learn about anything related to their own lives. And I think this is very damaging psychologically and a tragedy that is very much connected to the attack on education
Palestine. About 1.5 million, if I remember the number right, Israeli Arabs, citizens of Israel living inside Israel, and they basically have no rights. Israel has what they call its basic law. They don't have a constitution. And that law basically provides rights for Jews alone. Israel is a Jewish state. Non-Jews really aren't very welcome
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
It's a very hot
exactly.
concept for me to accept. I'm Jewish. I absolutely reject that concept. Imagine if we'll take a country like Iran, Marcy. It certainly is a Muslim state. The Jews live there very comfortably. They're not persecuted. They get by very well. Oh, we need to take another break. One thing
well,
I wanted
actually,
to
actually, it's interesting. I mean, it's interesting you bring up Iran because Israel tried to get the remaining Jews from Tehran to come to Israel permanently about a year or two ago. And
indeed.
As a block, they agreed.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Talking about the global BDS movement. Marcy, we have a break at the bottom of the hour, then just one more, so we have a lot of time left to go. I didn't want to forget to ask you about your personal safety. You're there teaching in the West Bank, and I'm very well aware of daily incursions by the IDF and Palestinians arrested, and occasionally there are killings, and all kinds of things are going on that are never reported in the U.S. media. And it's certainly easy to follow this if you go online and find good websites that tell you this daily. But what about your personal safety? Have you been affected personally by this?
I mean, the main thing that affects me are the checkpoints, because Nablus, you know, many of the demonstrations we've been having in Nablus in solidarity with Gaza have been about the fact that we're both besieged, but differently. We have 17 checkpoints that surround our area, and it makes it difficult to leave and sometimes come home. I've had a few different occasions where I've tried to go home, and the soldiers at the checkpoint have not allowed me to pass the checkpoint. So, and this is not about safety per se, but it's about the kinds of imprisonment that everyone who lives here is subjected to. It's not just Palestinians, but of course they always receive the brunt of this.
And of course,
but mostly, to be honest, who's under siege and who's attacked on a daily basis are Palestinians in refugee camps. I mean, this is where most of the harassment, the arrests, and the murders take place when they invade in the night.
In the refugee camps?
Yeah.
Of course, the Israeli forces will freely go into anyone's home. Sometimes they just seize the home as a military site and confine the family to a single room, really intimidating them. I saw a documentary film about it. I was quite surprised to see it on an off channel here in a national channel here in the U.S. some many months back.
You mean the CBS interview that was on like a week ago?
Oh, I didn't see 60 Minutes?
The Bob Simon piece on CBS.
Well, I'm aware of it.
I didn't watch
it. I'm aware of it, and that is very unusual to happen. But as I understand it, Bob Simon gave a very good report on what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, one of the places he was reporting from was actually Nablus, where I live, and there's a house on top of the mountain above the city where several times a month the Israeli soldiers come in and they take over this one family's house because it's above the city and they can watch from it. And the people become prisoners in their own home. And Bob Simon was showing this in his piece.
Well, once in a while they do something good unfortunately, it's like advertising, Marcy. It doesn't work unless you keep repeating it. So they might have a good report once in a very great while, but most of the rest of what is on, and you know it from all the years you spent here, is material that absolutely keeps the public in the dark about the most important things. If 60 Minutes did that all the time, what a difference that would make. I understand it's the most popular program here, or at least the most popular information-type program. But very sadly, it's a very rare occurrence. And I just wonder whether there were some very, very heavy recriminations for what he did. Israel doesn't take this lightly, and they have so much influence in the U.S. The Israeli lobby is so powerful here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very nice that Al Jazeera English is now on YouTube and many people can watch, and through a free program called Live Station you can download. And this is one of the best ways, I think, for Americans to see what's actually happening here. I mean, during the siege of Gaza, they were the only international news channel broadcasting from Gaza, and they were doing amazing coverage.
But Al Jazeera, I believe Al Jazeera got approval to broadcast in the U.S. Now, I don't know what cable companies would pick them up. I know I live in a building that has a cable service. Everybody gets it, whether we want it or not. And I have hundreds of channels, but I do not have Al Jazeera. And whether my cable company, which happens to be the biggest one of all, Comcast, whether they will pick it up, I don't know. If they did, I would certainly watch it occasionally. They do. They're not perfect, but they do what none of the others do, what the BBC doesn't do, but, of course, the U.S. media won't do in print or electronically. And thankfully, we have the Internet, and we can go online. There are programs like this and others like it where people can get real information about what's happening. But it would be impossible for me to have this program daily on CNN. That would be an impossibility. They simply wouldn't allow it. That's what we put up. And of course, the Israeli media is better than ours, but there's pretty heavy censorship there, too. I don't think Israeli television or radio would ever have anything like this. You can go to a publication like Haaretz and find some wonderful columnists. You'll find the same old stuff that won't tell you much of anything, but you will get some information that you won't get in the U.S. major print media.
Yes.
Oh, we.
Sure, but, you know, the Internet is, I mean, for people who want to know more, Electronic Intifada and sites like this have good information.
Oh, excellent. Absolutely excellent. The Electronic Intifada, a wonderful website. Palestine Chronicle, my friend Ramzi Baroud, he's been on the program and he'll be back shortly. We need to take another break, Marcy. Let's do that and we'll be right back.
Okay.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
See, I went to a website. I check daily the International East Media Center, and the headlines today are very much like the ones I see most every day. Israelis kidnap five young men from the village of Belin near Ramallah, where you are. One Israeli youth died from the wounds from the Gaza war. Israeli army demolishes four Palestinian homes in East Jerusalem. I mean, these are homes. These are people's homes. They have a right to them. Israel just decides who'll have a home and who won't have a home because they want to seize the land. So they, at will, will just demolish homes and give the owners hardly any time to get out. Maybe an hour to get out, often at a very odd time, middle of the night, crack of dawn in the morning. I mean, just outrageous stuff, no warning. Two more headlines that Israeli warplanes. We supposedly got a ceasefire in Gaza about the 17th of January. Israeli warplanes raid Gaza-Egypt border. And right below that it says Olmert and Barak considering more strikes in Gaza. Well, Israel never declares they may declare a ceasefire, but they never commit to a ceasefire. They just pause and then they start attacking again, plus everything going on in the West Bank. And you're there, you're in Nablus, I'm sorry. I was thinking you were in Ramallah. Ramallah, the headquarters of PA. But, I mean, this affects Nablus, this affects every place in the West Bank, whatever Israel decides it wants to do, which is just terrible oppression against the people under occupation, isolated. You mentioned checkpoints, Marcy. Oh, there's something like 600 or so checkpoints, some of them permanent, some what they call flying checkpoints. They move them around, whatever. And, I mean, this makes life impossible. For you to go from Nablus to Ramallah, that would be a great ordeal, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, I'm actually going tomorrow, and, you know, if it were a normal situation, it would be a quick little car ride for maybe an hour, but it will probably take me 2 to 3 hours to get there because of all of the checkpoints and whatnot that it takes me to travel.
Now, you're an American. I guess you would have an easier time than a Palestinian.
I mean, generally, this is true, but Nablus, living in Nablus is really different than living in Ramallah or even Bethlehem, where I used to live. It's very difficult to get in and out of Nablus, it's, no matter what your identity is. It's much more difficult. They hassle you at the checkpoints more. So sometimes it's easier, but it's, you know, they don't want foreigners here in Nablus in particular because it's so besieged on a daily or nightly rather basis, and so they don't want you to see what's happening here.
That I can understand. They don't want the reports getting out, and they might not treat you as harshly as they would a Palestinian. The fear that I get, not really fear, but maybe a little more hesitancy to do something to an American than they would to a Palestinian, but they certainly will not go out of their way to be hospitable to anybody there. Israelis, yeah, well, Israelis in the settlements, they guard them and they give them free rein to do anything they want, including attack Palestinians. But that's the reason for a BDS movement. Say more about what you're doing and how this connects to the global movement, Marcy.
Well, the global BDS movement is boycott, divestment, and sanctions, and it's modeled on the South African BDS movement. And so there's different sectors. There's an economic boycott, there's a sports boycott, a cultural boycott, an academic boycott, and then divestment, which happens sort of on a higher level. It's not as much individual work, but this is getting things like your company or your where you have your banks and other financial institutions to stop investing in Israel with Israeli companies or with the government. And then there's sanctions, which is at the state level, and thankfully we're actually seeing a lot of movement on all of these fronts right now, and there are a lot of European countries right now who are calling for sanctions, and in particular to with respect to military equipment or aid of any kind. There's so many countries, Ireland and Belgium and all over, people are calling and demanding for this kind of support for what many of us who live here see as a terrorist state, to stop funding it, to stop supporting it.
No, you're talking about organizations in these countries, not the governments themselves.
No, these are groups of people who are calling on their governments to
calling
stop.
On their it's, governments, yes. It's
on the sanction level, yeah, asking the governments to stop. So there's several levels. When I used to live in Lebanon, for instance, much of our work was on an economic boycott, but thankfully, because there's no normalization with Israel there, we were focusing on American corporations that invest in American companies that give back a lot of money to the state of Israel. So we had half a dozen or so companies that we target there in order to keep people from, to cause the companies to change their policies, ideally.
Well, I think it's all very important. The whole package, to me, is very important. And people like Francis Boyle, who I've quoted a number of times, I'm quoting him again in the article I'm working on. He wants the UN General Assembly under its authority to expel Israel from the entire United Nations system. And he wants a lot more besides that. He wants criminal war crimes prosecutions. And he's got about five or six steps that he lists. And he, years ago, was the legal counsel to the PLO and worked with them in the run-up to the Oslo process and explained exactly what they should have done, but which they did not do. And, of course, they got nothing out of Oslo. And here 15 years later, and things are worse than ever. And you've got the dual government situation. You've got what I call a coup d'etat government in the West Bank, Fatah under Abbas and Fayyad. And you've got the democratically elected government, Hamas, in Gaza. And they're called the bad ones. And the government with no credibility at all is called the legitimate government. And Abbas's term as president ran out on January 9th, and he refuses to step down. He wants to retain the office until legislative elections next year. And he's supported by the international community. That's pretty outrageous.
I mean, this is all true, but I mean, there are many of us here who feel that having any kind of government under occupation is a farce in general, regardless of who has been democratically elected or not, that the work that and time and money people spend should be in liberating their land rather than in having elections. I mean, because there's no way you can have anything but a puppet regime on some level when you're under occupation. It's just not possible.
Oh, absolutely.
And the other thing I should say, too, is that both Fatah and, to a certain extent, some of the statements from Hamas leaders that are deeply problematic for many of us who believe in justice is that, they're willing to sign on to a two-state solution. And this two-state solution completely leaves out the Palestinians who live in Israel, who do not want to be a part of a Palestinian Authority state, nor do they want to be a part of Israel. And also the right of return for Palestinian refugees, which for me fundamentally is the core of this problem, the root of it, and the one issue that needs to be solved that would solve all the other problems. And this really has to be the number one issue. And it's why I fight for this boycott, divestment, and sanctions, and why I do the kind of work I do, because this is, for me, bottom line, the most important thing. They have a right to return home. It's been 61 years.
Oh,
and many of these people have been multiply removed and displaced.
I absolutely agree. And Resolution 194 affirmed their right to return home or their descendants or be fully compensated for what they lost. And, of course, Israel ignores the resolution. They've ignored hundreds of resolutions, Security Council, General Assembly. They just pay no attention whatever to these resolutions. I very strongly believe in a one-state solution. I guess nothing is perfect because there's so much opposition, of course, from Israel, from Washington, opposition in the West. The Arab states do absolutely nothing to help the Palestinians. At times there's a lot of lip service, but no action. And to me, one state for all the people who legitimately have a right to live there, they should all be equal under the law. And the idea of a Jewish state or a Christian state or an Islamic state, that just does not compute with me. I believe in the principle of a strong firewall between a church and state. The state should be the state, and religion should be a religion, and we should respect them all. Everyone has a right to believe what they wish, and everybody should be granted what our First Amendment gives us here, a freedom of religion. But there's no freedom of religion in Israel, and Hamas, of course, wants a theocratic state. I don't accept that. They certainly don't have much bargaining power, but on numerous times, Marcy, you know that they have their leadership at different times has been willing to accept a two-state solution inside 1967 borders, the so-called occupied territories. But Israel has taken so much of the West Bank. This is Palestinian land, and to me, that's wrong. Something has to be done about that. And the refugees, the diaspora, they absolutely have a right of return, and no one should deny it to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is why, I mean, the boycott campaign, just to be clear, does not advocate one solution or another. It's just merely working towards getting to a place where we can have Palestinians in a place where they can make the decision that they want to make about what kind of state they want and deserve, and they can liberate their land. But personally, and other kinds of work that I do, I work towards a one-state solution, because for me, refugee right of return has to be number one. And, you know, there are also, you know, there are Druze here. There are also Baha'i here. It's not just Christians, Muslims, and Druze. So there are lots of religious groups who have the right to live and have religious freedom in this place where they're from, where they live. And I think that's important to remember.
Oh, indeed. Indeed. The group that you're involved with, Marcy, you're one of 15 professors in your group. Are you trying to enlist other American professors to join you?
Yes, we're seeking endorsements. We have a website up where people can you know, read more about the boycott campaign, and where they can send us an email giving us their endorsement on the website.
I don't know whether listeners can remember this, but the website is usacbi.wordpress.com, and I'm looking at one of the pages. Is there an easy way for listeners to Google a website?
I'm not sure. I haven't tried that, actually.
I'll give it one more time. usacbi.wordpress.com. Now, that will get you right to the site.
Okay. And there's no www.
Oh, a www, of course.
There is no www.
Oh, there is no www? Well,
no.
If anyone Googles what I just did, they can find it very easily. I found it very easily myself. And I've got a bookmark to save. And also the BDS, the Global BDS Movement site. And that one's a little easier to remember. They have a www, and that's BDS, and that stands for Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, BDSMovement.net. Now that's very easy, and that has an awful lot of information on it, and I'm using that website, Marcy, to explain exactly what the movement stands for, what it wants to do, and plus some information about them and how they got started and so on. And to me and to you, this is vital stuff. This is to awaken. Everything starts with awareness, as we both know. People need to know what's going on. People need to know that there's some awfully outrageous practices. People are being terribly persecuted. International law is being violated. And no one in authority is doing anything about it. So It's up to grassroots efforts. It's up to people of conscience. If governments won't do it, then people have to do it. And that's always the way the change comes about, because governments work for the special interest and people work for their own interests. So we have to do it. And that very definitely is a mission of this program, to create awareness on lots of important issues and get people involved to realize that if we don't do things in our own self-interest, then no one's going to do it for us. The Palestinians are a core issue for me, Marcy.
Yeah.
Certainly
it's,
for you.
I mean, it's important, and it's very much connected to the region in general. I mean, to having stability and justice in the region in general, this has to be solved.
I don't believe that peace in the Middle East is possible without an equitable settlement, justice for the Palestinians. And the problem, as I see it, is that Washington and Israel are both committed to violence, not peace. They pay lip service to peace, whether it's the roadmap or whatever, and it's all a false facade, because the real agenda is conflict, more conflict, and Israel and Washington get very nervous when things settle down, and there are no attacks, there's nothing they can pin on the Palestinians. We need to take another break. The hour goes by so fast. We'll take a break, and then we'll finish up with your final comments, Marcy. We have about a few minutes left.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Very briefly, during the break, I got my daily electronic Intifada email, and one of the things they have on the site today is a January 31st full-page ad in the Irish Times, and the headline on the electronic Intifada says, Irish Civil Society Calls for Boycott of Israel, and you can download the ad, a full-page ad, my goodness, in the Irish Times. And
you can find this on our website, too.
It's on your website, too. Well, that's wonderful.
Yes.
I mean, this is what we need. Things start small, and they build, and they build. And this is why I wanted to have you on the program, to get the word out to many thousands more people who don't know about this, and they need to, understand the importance of why we need to pursue this. But you finish up with some final thoughts. We just have a couple of minutes.
I mean, I hope people will really take some time to explore the websites you talked about, for cultural workers and academics who can endorse us. That's wonderful. And also the BDS website, one of the great things there is you can find out how to boycott Israeli products in the United States. This is very, very important. And I don't mean just products built or created in the territories, occupied territories. I mean all Israeli products must be boycotted. And there's some really easy ways to understand, to look at the barcode, to see where things are made. But these are some things individuals can do on a daily basis that I think are really important. And also to support your local economy. In the United States right now, things are really hitting families hard, hitting communities hard. So I think always, especially when you're buying food products and things like this, it's really important to buy from your own community. And I think boycotting, also coupled with boycotting, being really smart about where you buy things from and who you are supporting is essential right now.
Oh, I agree with that. Absolutely. Marcy, we're almost out of time, and I want to leave you with an invitation to come back and do this again. I hope as things develop, if there's important information, things that are going on, sometimes I'm in a lot of different directions at once and I don't keep up. But if there are important things going on, I would appreciate your alerting me, and I would welcome you back anytime to discuss them. This is important. and I want to get on. I want to be one of your members from my perspective and what I can do to help. And I offer you my services to do that.
Thank you so much.
Again, Marcy, it was important to have you on. I thank you very, very kindly. I hope you'll stay safe. I wish you well in the campaign, and I will continue to talk about it and discuss it. And I will have an article. I have other things I'm working on, too, but I will have an article on the whole idea of a global movement for cultural and economic and diplomatic boycott of Israel, because it's important. Israel is a serial aggressor, a serial international law violator, and this simply can't be tolerated. And our tax dollars here in the U.S. support them. Without those tax dollars, Israel could not do what it does. Billions of dollars every year, the latest weapons, and this goes on and on and on since the donations began. It's well in excess of $100 billion. Our money, not working for peace, working for war. Marcy, again, my great thanks to you for coming on. And this will be continued.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Marcy. Tomorrow we'll have an archive repeat. Friday, another live program. Please come back and join us.